73.
I think we're doing this all wrong, Zila said. She looked at Andrew. He sat with his eyes closed and his chin tucked against his throat. His lips moved silently. He doesn't know anything about electronics either. He just came in here and attacked the controls. Attacked the canvas.
She pictured herself starting a painting. Her brush reached out and touched the center of the canvas.
Okay, said Zila. Aesthetics and ergonomics. We all try to do things the easy way. It's how we're built.
Clive and Debbie exchanged a glance. Debbie shrugged.
Okay, she said.
Zila glanced down at the praying man again and balanced herself in front of the control panel on her good leg.
You said he was standing about here. Andrew and I are the same height, so if I was going to flip a random switch...
She held out her hand. It came to rest just below shoulder height.
I'd probably go for something right in this area.
Zila leaned in and studied the dusty switches. They were broad steel pins with square tips. Some of them had crumbling rubber sleeves on them.
All of them did something, said Debbie. Andrew did most of it, but they all changed at least one.
Zila's head went up and down along the panel. She glanced at Debbie.
Do you guys have a flashlight handy? I think so.
Clive nodded. Check the tool chest. Should be a mini mag in the top drawer on the left side. Debbie found the flashlight and tossed it to Zila. Zila played the beam across the panel. Then she pushed her head close to the controls and looked down the row of switches. A century of dust and grit was piled up on most of the switches. A third of them gleamed in the flashlight beam.
Okay, she said with another glance at Andrew. He knew he didn't have a lot of time. Somebody could walk by, hear all the ruckus, maybe call the police. The quickest, easiest thing to do would be just to flip switches, right? And it's not ergonomic to push them up. He'd push all of them down.
Debbie nodded.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Zila pointed at the row of controls, careful not to touch them.
The squail blew off the dust bunnies, but a bunch of these switches have all the dust wiped off. You can see it when the light hits them. They're clean. There's even streaks on a few of them, like oil from someone's finger.
They glanced at Andrew. His head was down, but his lips had stopped moving. Clive raised the shotgun back up to Andrew's head.
And this knob, Zila said, shining the light on it. There's dust under it, but not on top. It's almost a full 180 from where it was before.
Are you sure? Asked Clive.
Pretty damn sure, said Zila. She took a cautious step away from the control panel. It might take a little time, but I think I can figure out where everything was before Dickless there turned the machine off. Do you have some paper? Even just a legal pad or something?
Sure,
Debbie said.
I've got printer paper, too.
Perfect. And a sharp pencil.
The ground beyond the ridge dropped away. It was a massive crater, or maybe an excavation. It had to be at least half a mile deep. The far side blurred into the horizon. At the center of it, reaching up to the sky, was the tower. It was hazy because it was so far away. The tower was an obelisk of some sort, like a six-sided Washington Monument, and it was covered with engraved swirls and patterns. The top was a familiar arrangement of prongs and horizontal bars. Each of them had to be 50 or 60 feet thick to be visible from here, like the massive towers that held up freeways. It took Nate a moment, then it struck him the whole thing looked like a gigantic jewelry setting for a ring. He tried to guess how tall the tower was, but there was nothing near it to use for scale. Piled around its base were smaller obelisks and buildings and halls, like a sprawling castle or a small city. As far as Nate could see, there were no windows. One archway near the edge of the complex looked small in comparison, but it could have been 100 feet tall. He brought his gaze closer and his eyes settled on something halfway down the slope. He almost gasped. Tim slapped a hand over his mouth before he could. A few hundred yards below them hunched a line of men and women. Their skin was leathery, their hair matted into rough dreadlocks. Many of them were on their hands and knees clawing at the sand. A few carried rocks.
They're people, said Vic.
Her voice dropped when she saw the others.
There's people here?
How?
Said Tim. He opened his pack and pulled out two small sets of binoculars. One of them went to Nate.
There's nothing to eat, no water.
Maybe it's all in the castle,
said Roger. He jabbed a finger at the complex.
Could have Star Trek replicators and everything in there.
They don't look too advanced, said Nate. He turned a wheel with his thumb and pressed his eyes to the lenses. I think they're all naked.
Seriously?
Asked Roger. He peered down the slope.
No, said Tim. He had his own set of binoculars to his eyes. They're not naked. They all have collars on. Metal collars.
It took a moment for the implication to set in.
Let me see, said Veek.
She took the binoculars from Nate and pushed her glasses up onto her forehead. Roger held out a hand for Tim's set, but the older man ignored him.
I don't see a lock on any of them, said Tim, but I do see what look like old scars. If I had to guess, I'd say they're riveted onto the people somehow. They don't come off.
Do you see an overseer or something? Asked Nate. A guard? Tim shook his head.
Not yet.
Look at them, said Veek. Their jawlines. It's like a gorilla. Even the women. Heavy brows, too.
Eyebrows?
Asked Roger.
No, the actual brows, the bones of their skull.
She shook her head.
They look like Neanderthals.
She handed the binoculars back to Nate.
What the fuck are cavemen doing here? Asked Roger.
They look like them, said Tim. It doesn't mean they are.
He paused.
The guards aren't human.
Where?
Tim pointed without raising his hand or putting it out past the edge. That group down there, he said, the larger one, look near the center. He blends in because his cloak's the same color as the sand.
Nate scanned back and forth. He passed the figure twice before his eyes caught its movement against the endless sand of the pit. It was almost invisible. The guard was tall and lean, a good 2 or 3 feet taller than the cavemen, although it was hard to be sure with the slant of his crooked shoulders. A dust-colored cloak and hood covered most of his features, but Nate saw a sharp chin beneath the hood. Needle-like teeth jutted up out of the jaw. They looked too long for the mouth to close. Eyes gleamed inside the hood, but Nate couldn't see any details. A spear leaned against the guard's body, and its hands held the shaft in an easy grip, one above the other. The fingers and knuckles had the color and texture of wet clay, the same as the jaw. The same as the old woman's skin. The guard's other hand was twitching against his side. It was the motion of someone trying to keep a tally, or maybe just a nervous tick of some kind. Nate's mental gears jammed for a moment. He shifted the binoculars, then he shifted them back. He did it again to be sure of what he was seeing. The guard had 2 hands on the spear. It also had 1 hand twitching at its side.
No way, he said.
There's another one, said Tim, his eyes pressed against the binoculars. And another. Christ, there's a couple hundred of them, maybe more.
The arm? Asked Nate.
They're all like that, Tim said. And they're functional. It's not some freak mutation or something.
What?
Said Veek. The guards all have an extra arm, said Nate, like the roaches. He handed her the binoculars. She lifted them to her eyes.
I'd guess there's around 6,000 slaves down there, said Tim. Whatever they are, maybe as many as 500 guards.
Going off the line of slaves and overseers, Nate guessed the tower was 2 miles away. He tried to calculate figures in his head and thought about times he'd climbed up Runyon Canyon to look down at Los Angeles. The view from up there helped give him a sense of scale. If he was right, the other buildings at the base of the tower were over 1 mile away. The tower itself had to be close to 1/4 mile across at ground level. It stood 5 times taller than it was wide. It wasn't just hazy because of the distance, it was reaching into the clouds.
We'd never make it down there, Tim said.
He lowered his binoculars and shook his head.
Count the crater wall and it's a couple of miles of open ground with a guard every 100 yards or so on the floor. I wouldn't try it with a machine gun and a case of grenades. Hell, it'd be tough with air support.
He rolled onto his back and slid below the top of the ridge.
Even if we did make it, that's 4 or 5 pentagons put together. We could spend years searching it for Oscar.
Oh, hell,
said Veek. Without lowering the binoculars, she fumbled for her phone.
Got a call?
Asked Roger. I wish, she said. She unlocked the phone to reveal the streaming gibberish. She glanced at the phone, then put her eyes back to the binoculars.
It's the same.
Nate looked at the phone.
What? The squiggles on the phone, said Vig. The stuff we couldn't figure out, it's all over the tower. It's on everything. It's all over the buildings and the...
Vig choked. She held out the binoculars for anyone and slid a few feet down the slope. She tipped her head and let her glasses fall back into place. Nate reached out and she grabbed his hand.
You okay?
He asked.
I found Oscar, she said. Her eyes were wide.
Tim flipped back on his stomach and shuffled back up the slope.
Yeah? Yeah, said Vig. Most of him.
Fuck, muttered Roger. Tim scanned the crater with his binoculars. Where? Vig pushed her glasses up and rubbed her eyes with her palms.
Left side of the tower, there's a big thing that looks like a barn with a silo. There's a dome just past it, and then a big plaza. He's there.
Nate took the binoculars from her hand and crawled after Tim. He found the barn and followed it to the dome. There was a huge covered walkway, more like a covered six-lane highway, that led to an enormous plaza of rough cobblestones. There were obelisks studding the end of it. A few dozen yards out from the arched entrance to the highway was a blob of ivory on the dark stones. He played with the dials until the blob solidified. The bottom half of Oscar's body was gone. Nate tried to be clinical and noted it was a clean edge. Something had chopped, bitten, straight through him at the hips, and taken his legs and crotch away. From the angle of the remains, it looked like most of his guts were gone. They'd left an empty torso supported by his ribcage. His skin was pale, and Nate wondered if Oscar's blood had all leaked out across the thirsty sand, or if the squale had drained him like a gigantic vampire bat. Roger took the binoculars from Nate and looked at the manager's body.
You think he was dead before it bit him? He probably just died of shock when it hauled him away, Tim said. His face didn't look as certain.
Good, said Vig. That's good.
They all settled back down on their side of the ridge.
We should get out of here, said Nate. Get back to Kavach and try to figure out the machine on our own.
A cloud passed in front of the sun, blocking the dim light for a moment. Another one hit it, and they were in shadow.
Wind's picking up, said Roger. Might be a rough ride back.
Jesus, said Vig. It's not wind.
The squales had returned.